This is an iHeartRadio New Zealand podcast.
You right, Macca?
Yeah, no, I'm good, mate. I'm good. No DoorDash over here.
That must be a special coffee because there's not a lot of it.
No, we're in the right part. Just a little piccolo with a bit of a fuck. I rubbed bloody Tabasco sauce in my eye when I was rushing, hurriedly having a fucking egg downstairs, Rick. That's not good. There's only one other place worse to rub it.
On the knob.
Yeah. Mm.
You've never been suckles in here, have you?
Well, mate, you might as well get to the point.
I thought it was pretty obvious.
Yeah, I know, but you know, for people that don't know, they go, "Well, what was that?"
What?
All right, let's just roll some titles. Welcome to the last show of the TAB Sports Cafe. We've got some special guests. We've got Lee and Lana, got Macca and Portofino, and we've
last
got...
show, yay!
No, that's don't cheer about that, mate.
Well, no, you do. One does. I mean, it's been a wonderful season, Rick. You know.
And we've got Eva from Bulgaria.
Hello.
And I don't know if you remember him, but remember Zinzan Brook from Zinzan Valentine Brook from London.
Sinny. Long time no see.
Oh, Valentino, here he is.
Yeah, Valentino.
International show, isn't it?
A lot of complete lunatics. So let's go straight into it. Did any of you watch the Warriors on the weekend?
No.
Was
that a wedding?
Did they play?
So, it was really exciting. In the last minute of the game, they missed a drop kick. The ball went down. Leka Halasena picked the ball up. Beat 19 players, scored in the last second of the game to win the game, and this was the reaction.
Oh, shall I?
Spirit.
Yeah, so
I want that same drink.
Whatever they have,
I want the same drink as they've got.
It's very different than the old Warriors changing room, that's for sure.
Oh, you were in the old Warriors changing room, weren't you?
Yeah, hence the statement. No, that's called celebration. That's New Age celebration right there. Well, do they go out after the game, do you think, or not? Or is it sort of confined to the celebration post-match in changing room?
Was it you didn't have a lot of celebrations because you didn't win a lot of games?
Oh, about 50%, Rick. You know, flip a coin.
What events, Zinny? What games do you like to go to now that you've relocated to the UK? What sort of big events do you go to? Sporting events that you go to? Because obviously the fans are a lot more passionate in that country.
Yeah, Wimbledon and Chelsea games.
I would imagine there'd have been some champagne and strawberry.
Yeah, well, yeah, you can, but you got to dress up for that. I sort of take it on the grass watching the big stand. I don't like getting actually in there because the seats are too bloody small.
And you'd block everyone's views with that great big head.
Well,
I'm not paying 150 quid to sit by that fucking noggin. Jesus Christ.
I know.
You're at Wimbledon and you're doing this the whole time.
Hey, Zinny, you said that you were going to catch up with Jannik Sinner, the Wimbledon champion.
Yes, I did. But special player. I've just loved the way he's been playing. I have been following him for a year or so.
Nothing like two sinners catching up.
Says the devil incarnate.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed, Macca, that you're feeding yourself grapes. That's a good sign.
There's no DoorDash here, as I said before, you know. So it's nice for me to actually once be enjoying myself and, you know, having a bite to eat whilst you sit there and suffer.
Just enjoying yourself.
Don't hold any feelings back, Mac.
Mm. No, never have.
Just a little reminder, Zinny. So TAB is a magnificent sponsor for us and they've been with us since the beginning, 1996.
Yep.
When they first came on board with sports betting, this was the ad that they played.
And I thought I'd snap my Achilles. I thought my chances of getting the cup were over. From that point on, I was just so determined to get back in that I knew I had 6 weeks. I can't even walk across the field, and I'm trying to get to the World Cup. Every day, 7 days a week, my day would start at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I have acupuncture, massages, stretching, physio, ultrasound. You know, the sessions that you had, like the decompression chamber. You know, if someone said to me, if you put fried eggs on your leg, I probably would have believed them.
Well, speaking of the fried eggs on the leg, mate, I got a really bad pork thigh once, and in 94, I couldn't play for a season. And I bumped into this Maori fella. He said, "Oh, yeah, bro." He said, "You've got to put the kowhai bark in a hot bath and jump in there and soak in it, and that'll bring the bruise out." And I went, "Oh, shit, brilliant, done." Jumped in this hot bath with kowhai bark, which I basically ring bark the tree, a native tree, and you're illegal. Jumped in and came out about 45 minutes later. Leg was exactly the same. I was just stained from basically the boobs down, the whole body, like chocolate brown, lasted about 3 months. He would have been laughing himself to bloody, oh, what a prick.
It's good. You need to write a book, Macca.
You know who you are, mate. You got me. And I kind of appreciate it.
What is that sauce we're talking about for?
Is it Tabasco.
Is that how you put Tabasco sauce on you? Did he tell you to do that as well?
Yeah, no, it's apparently an Italian lovemaking technique. You know, blind yourself with Tabasco sauce and stumble around. It's cheaper than buying a mask.
Hey, Zinni, do you remember that ad? Do you remember, tell us the story behind it?
That was the preview for the 95 World Cup, wasn't it? So, yeah, I do remember that. I partially tore my Achilles, and I couldn't run. So I wanted to get there, and so I was so determined with Doc Mayhew and George. I got in the arena and had one little opportunity, but it was a strapping of the Achilles that was an absolute bloody nightmare.
And you used to go into that diver's chamber,
decompression chamber.
Yeah. I just wanted to do anything, you know, like I say, you know. There's a bit of humour in it with putting your fried eggs on it. I didn't think that was going to work, but it was one of those sort of things that I just wanted to get to that with that team in 95. I felt that we had had an opportunity, certainly when we went and beat South Africa in 93.
And that hyperbaric chamber, that oxygenates the blood, doesn't it? It's sort of like a diving thing. If you get the bends, you go in there and it pressurises?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
That would have been new age back then.
Well, yeah, it would have been, yeah. Like now, yeah, I wouldn't have a Scooby-Doo what they do now, but I'd say that would be more advanced. But it was just having guys in your team like Doc Mayhew and George Duncan. You know, they were just absolutely phenomenal. Look what those guys have gone on and done. It's.
I was going to see if you had any questions.
Well, I know that you aren't competing anymore with sport, but interesting enough, your kids are quite competitive in sport, so they're obviously probably showing you a thing or two. How many kids have you got?
17.
I've got six kids. I've got two boys and four girls, and they're all in the sporting arena. And, they're doing very, very well. And, yeah, but it's quite hard.
What sort of spectator are you on the sideline?
Yeah, that's the question.
Sort of have to hold my emotions back and just sort of sit and enjoy watching there. But sometimes I feel like I want to get on the park, and but I clearly can't. But that's the competitive sort of edge that I've never lost, and that's what I see in my kids. Our kids with what they're doing, and they've got that sort of. That what I call that little mongrel dog.
I'd imagine you'd be very dangerous on the sideline because you get to that age where, you know, kids are around about sort of eight, sort of six through eight or ten, and the umpire or the ref is a parent. And often they're a parent of the other side, and you get some quite abysmal calls happening, you know, and as an ex-sportsman you go, come on, just let the best bloody team win, you know, rather than trying to dictate terms of plumbing LBWs to 8-year-olds and, you know, forward passes that get given away. How do you cope with that? Because, I nearly got cleaned out in South Auckland once for suggesting the ref might have another look at things.
Yeah, I know, but you're allowed to do forward pass. You're allowed to do forward passes and netball, and that's quite easy. So I don't get frustrated at all.
Okay, fair. They all play netball,
yeah.
Do they?
Yeah. So Kira, Macy, and Ruby play netball. Ruby's the ballet dancer, and then Eden is the one that's on the framework of potentially representing England with football, hockey, and netball. So,
What age does she have to choose between all three of those?
Well, that's going to be a discussion that I don't want her. I want her to make a decision as to what she wants to do. So I would like her to go down the potential football route. And it's up to her.
You're not allowed to choose the one that's got the most money. That's awkward.
Those football fans are crazy.
I've not mentioned money to her. I've just wanted her to actually choose the sport that she wants to do herself, as opposed to, look, it's a sport and it's a journey. And if you're up for it, it's there to be had. So
And they're all mainstream sports too. They're not the costly ones like, let's say, skiing or yachting or show jumping.
No.
You'd be very happy for them to make a decision early rather than doing all three of those, I'd imagine.
Absolutely right, Macca. You've obviously been watching.
Yeah, well, that's what I do. I'm a voyeur.
Did you watch the All Blacks, Zinni? What did you think of the All Blacks?
The All Blacks. Yeah, there was a couple of moments there that I thought they. The whole campaign. Yes, they did. They did a fantastic job. But there were some moments there. But that's probably addressed. There was a few mistakes in the last game yesterday. But France actually. Took it to us, and they definitely wanted to win, but the All Blacks needed to up their ante and ask questions of the French, they did so, but they got there in the end, but 10 points, but it wasn't looking great in the first half, but France are never going to go away. They're a good side and they're a difficult side. I was sort of a little bit disappointed, because I think the first game was the putting the marker down, which I felt the French wanted to just show the All Blacks, we haven't bought the A team, but we're still going to produce the goods. And in that first game, that either side could have actually won that game, and it was actually that blind spot tackle in that last 2 minutes. Where Barrett kicked the ball into touch, and then the All Blacks shut the game down. So I was pleased the All Blacks won, but I was also pleased that a French B team actually potentially were there, and they played and they asked the questions of the All Blacks.
Hey Zinni, just as you know footy better than any of us, but what's the difference between that B team that came to New Zealand and their A team? In terms of points, can we take some momentum out of beating their B team, or is their A team that much better that it's just a non-event? We can't really take any.
Well, on the first performance on the first game, the A and the B team could have actually because I felt that first test match, France were very unlucky not to win that, so yeah. But the French A team would have been a lot stronger.
Okay.
Are you watching South Africa with interest? What sort of challenge do you think they'll bring to us in a couple of months?
They're definitely going to ask the question. They're definitely not going to sit back. And but if they think they're just going to sit on their high horse and think, yeah, we're South Africa, we're going to come into New Zealand and going to kick your butts. But the All Blacks are going to have to step up to that there, but it's not going to be easy. I feel the South Africans have, I was actually peeved off about that bloody kick that they did at the. I think that was totally disrespectful to playing the game when they did that little short, the short kickoff they did.
What's your thoughts on that bomb squad thing? That approach?
Well, I think that, you know, they're playing the game, and you know, I think that's fine.
I think it's bloody clever. They've evolved and they're ahead of the game. They've made the change.
Yeah,
you know, in much the same way as in '87, the All Blacks wanted to move the ball around. These guys have made a change, and they're doing it to the letter of the law, and it works. It works bloody effectively. Slow the game down.
Look, guys, there's far too much intelligent sports chat going on here. Can I just look back, Cindy, at where we had? This is the sort of guest that we used to have. I don't know if you remember Simon Weirutini.
Simon Weirutini, yes. Yeah. Goodness me, yeah.
And the latest person to join us here at the TAB Sports Cafe, Simon Weirutini. Simon, what are you up to down in Queenstown?
I'm just having a mountain blast of a time like Whakapapa and enjoying the nice new snow down here like you all are at the Queenstown Winter Festival. I want to stick up for Lana too on his first day. It is very hard to get going. On my first day, I had trouble with my boots. Like, you guys had boots trouble too.
See?
This big boot thing. Yeah. It's just, you know.
Do you want to explain the piece around your neck? It's not subtle.
It's weighty.
Right. We've got the ball on tonight, so everybody goes along. Mm-hmm. And it is quite a social thing, obviously. So the people of our regions dress as they feel refinement and required to go out there and have a social damn good time. And this is a greenstone blade mined from the head of the Wakatupu Lake.
What does it feel like when you're coming down the hill, bro?
It's a lot of noise in your head when you're going on a rush and you almost get an Eric.
What sort of speeds, mate? What sort of speeds?
It's the worst.
Did you get an Eric?
No, hold on.
It's
the
worst
joke we've ever had on this sports game.
What are your aims for the ski season?
How about that way? Shut down here.
When I go straight out, I don't like it. You've got to keep your tips down, hands forward, trimmed. I aim to stay in control a little bit, but a little bit out of control.
Okay.
Got that, Rick. That wild side on you. Rick, like yourself.
You're a very, very, very strange man, Simon.
I take it as an absolute compliment.
Oh, mate, he's brilliant, eh? Where's he gone? We need him back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one's changed at all, have they?
Special chat, that.
Yeah, I look different, eh?
I look just the same.
Just the hair, that's all.
What the hell was that guy? What the hell was that guy wearing that black and white stripe thing on the side?
Yeah, the young fella.
What were the odds on Root Simon bloody lopping the top off a couple of yokes with that mirror? During the night, I'd have given him a wide berth around about 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
I got a funny feeling that we did bump into him about 2 o'clock in the morning. And the thing is, he was ready for 2 o'clock in the morning at 7 o'clock when we did that show, so it worked out well.
He was ready 24-7.
Yeah, he was always 2 o'clock in the morning.
He was always like that all the time. Hey, bro, hey.
One more look down memory lane, Zinni. This one's just a special memory of John Kirwan, Sir John Kirwan, playing for the Warriors and
Jake
showing
Cuddy.
Off his fighting styles.
Kirwan and Williams, a little bit of push and shove. I don't know what happened on the tackle over there, but something really got John Kirwan going. Well, there's a little push and shove out there, and sure, Jason Williams might want to get involved with JK.
It's not like John, he's quite a pacifist.
I didn't look that bad, Rick.
Quite a good effort.
Well, he had that sort of wind. I don't think he actually threw a punch. I think it was more a punch push.
It was a handbag.
Handbags.
Did you see the handbag come up? The handbag came up quite late.
He was never really known for his fighting styles, was he?
No, he used to punch like this.
An underdog.
Yeah, it was always one of your strengths, eh?
Wow, I condone that, so.
Yeah.
He punched with his feet, that bugger, at the bottom of a ruck. If you got anywhere near a place he could put a stomper, you'd feel it.
Yeah, you would too.
He's not denying it.
No, he's not denying it.
No.
Did you, Zinni, you must have put the league studs into the old rugby boots and shown the ref the rugby boots and then put the league studs on before a game.
Exactly right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
See, we all did it back in the 90s. Well, not we. The Fords all did it back in the 90s, and we encouraged it, loved it.
We used to sharpen our sprigs as well. That was the difference. That was the only difference.
Looking back at it all, Zinni, you know, we're all getting on a bit, but when you look back at your career, what was your favourite moment? I mean, we all love the drop goals and stuff, but what was your favourite moment of your career?
The most enjoyable one was, because I do have a lot of respect for South Africa, and it was the Test Series, being involved in the first All Black side ever to win on South African soil, not a Test match, a Test Series. And we played South Africa five five times in 1996, and it was the tour, and it was the second. It was the second Test match in Pretoria, and yeah, we did it hard, but the South Africans were up for it. But yeah, winning that Test series was absolutely amazing, and that for me was the was a highlight.
There's that amazing footage of the South Africans just charging your line nonstop, quick taps, scrums, just attacking, and you guys just repelling them with amazing tackles. And then the whistle went,
yeah,
and you just collapsed.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, and the thing is, there when we stood on the I remember saying, I said, right, let's just chop their legs off, and just make sure that thing that maul doesn't come over the line. And yeah, we held on. Referee blew the full-time whistle, and there we are, and the job's done. And yeah, it was a tough Test match, and that's what you're supposed to do.
I suppose, especially after the World Cup loss the year before, that must have been huge motivation as well, going to that series.
Well, yeah, we were a sporting nation as well, and we saw the good side, because South Africa weren't in 87 or 91, so we sort of felt that we should give it to them. And you know, we made a gesture of let South Africa win the World Cup for Mandela and Francois Pienaar, and it was quite important. But it was what we do as rugby players.
Did we get poisoned?
Well, all I'll say was it wasn't a level playing field.
There you go, very diplomatic.
Let it go, eh?
No, you've got to ask the question, because everyone says no, it's just bullshit and sore grapes. When you've got 25 people in the squad, three people have been sick in 6 weeks, and then 48 hours out from the World Cup, 19 or 20 of them go down with the same screaming shits and vomiting.
I know, Mackie, you were the first one to go down. Zinni, were you sick? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was a Thursday lunch. It was the Thursday lunch. It was, but I'm not.
We've all let it go. That's the good thing.
Yeah, obviously not.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I've let it go. Yeah. But it definitely was. It definitely wasn't a level playing field. I can tell you that. Yeah.
You know, the sad thing is I actually remember exactly what we had for lunch, and I really, really enjoyed it. It was like spaghetti bolognese and chicken burgers.
Did you get sick?
Yeah, I got sick, but
it was worth it.
But it was worth it. The food was so nice. The food that made me sick.
The only ones who didn't get sick were the guys who went out to McDonald's.
I loved it. All right, mate. Thanks, Zinni. Thank you so much for joining us for this last show. You're such a big part of the TAB Sports Cafe.
Cheers, mate.
Love you all, guys. Love you all.
Likewise, man.
Bye.
Take care, mate. See you, guys.
Bye, buddy.
All right, just before our next guest, I wanted to ask you all a question. What sport would be better if the participants were drinking first?
Oh, well, something like equestrian, when the rider was drunk but the horse wasn't.
I think it would be better if the horse was drinking and the rider was...
No one
likes animal cruelty.
Well, let's just turn around and say what sport wouldn't be better if they weren't drinking.
Cricket, exactly. Definitely.
Cricket.
They'll have more animal
cruelty. Hurdles would be great, wouldn't it? Drunk people doing hurdles.
or the diving.
Anything that required coordination.
It would make the Olympics more interesting if they had a big session first and then went out and did all the Olympic events. Pole vault would be fun.
A different type of athlete would kick in, wouldn't it? You know, certain people that can handle it.
Yeah.
You know, they'd be...
You have the athletes in different categories. Don't worry about the weight category, you have the people who come in after 6 beers, 12 beers, and then the super heavyweights after 18 beers.
Yeah.
I think everyone would tune in for the after 18s, wouldn't they? You know, after 18s, doing 100 metres.
Where would you be? You'd be quite good, Macca. It's not, yeah.
Oh, I'd go in the after 6.
Right, sort of like middleweight.
Lightweight.
Yeah, bantam.
All right, we've got another guest joining us on this final show.
You'd come on like the bomb squad.
But they'd call it the bomb squad.
Yeah.
Jaeger bomb squad.
Yeah. Jaeger bomb squad.
Lee, I reckon you'd open your own category after 24 beers.
Yeah.
You'd win golds and everything. Yeah. 24 beers in 3 days.
In 3 days.
And 3 days of no sleep and 48 beers.
And you start on the third day. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now, joining us, privileged to welcome on board a legend to the TAB Sports Cafe. Not that Zinni wasn't a legend, but... Mad Mike.
Hey, you mate. So I was just going to say the most terrifying moment of my life was driving a car with this mad bastard in Pukekohe. And he was just going down the back straight, doing 200K, just drifting sideways. And there's grass strips on the side. So if you get a wheel in that grass, I'm presuming it's going to be hard to control a car. And he's just looking at me going, hey, go, mate, you're right. And just, and I'm just going, and I did one lap and I said, mate, why don't we just pull in? And I jumped out. I've never been so terrified in my life. I thought it was curtains. And nor have I ever been in a sport where you can't actually get your computer to work out how this guy's doing it. It was happening so fast and the skill involved was so beyond my comprehension that you are most certainly a legend, my man, but by God, I won't ever get in a car with you again.
Most people are the same. It's a one-lap wonder.
Yeah. Well, mate, when you're not even looking at the road and you're doing 200K and your tyres are getting that close to the grass and you're going, yeah, you're right. You must know that course like the back of your hand.
Nah, I didn't actually. I was fresh to the sport, straight off the dirt bike, mate. That's why you were the guinea pig.
Mate, you've done some amazing things. What's the highlight of your career?
Oh, mate, there's been so many incredible milestone moments, you know, of from winning championships and world records. And, you know, I'd say for me, the biggest one's inspiring youngsters to chase their dream. Well, anyone to chase their dreams, you know. Like for me, growing up with mum in East Auckland, you know, not much money in the family, no father role model around or anything, but just, bit of determination and surround yourself with the right people and motivation to chase the dreams. And I feel like that's probably, for me now, like having the reach of social media, it's so easy for me to be able to do a post. Rick, we were talking about this the other night at the game, but it's like literally it's, if someone's got a device, they can connect to a Wi-Fi, you know, sit outside a Starbucks or a McDonald's and literally read what's going on through YouTube, Instagram, Facebook and all that stuff. And to be able to connect to the world and engage with my fans, I think that's probably one of the biggest milestones for me, to be honest.
Tell these guys about the guy that you met in the tarpaulin. Tell them about and the impact that
you had. Oh, yeah. So, you know, for me before, the drifting was freestyle motocross and BMX and, you know, all the stuff you do when you're young little grom. And still to this day, I still love riding bikes. So when it was 2015, I went back to do the World Championship and 8 rounds consisted of USA rounds. So I'd fly into California. I'd go ride my BMX at Sheep Hills, which was like a local BMX park down in Newport Beach. And I was riding with this dude, Craig, all day. His bike was like a race bike. So it was kind of like, you know, I kind of was like, oh, it's weird he's on an old race bike. He ripped, like he was a really good rider. But at the end of the day, I was like, oh, Craig, where do you stay, bro? I'll drop you off in my truck. And he's like, oh, this is where I stay. This is home right here. I'm like, at the BMX park. And he showed me around where his shelter was, literally underneath the tarpaulin, no water, no food, like nothing, and no power. And I was like, bro, how do I connect with you on Instagram? And he's like, oh, I go up and connect to the Wi-Fi outside McDonald's. And I was like, holy shit. And he's just like, yeah, bro, like seeing your posts every day just inspire me to keep chasing my dreams. And he unfortunately passed away about 2 years ago, but that for me was a real point in my life where I was like, I can be way down here in New Zealand. I can be in the middle of Saudi Arabia. I could be in Lebanon. I could be frigging Dubai, Las Vegas, wherever in the world doing a project and literally be able to inspire people to chase their dreams. So for me, that's been pretty cool. And then obviously the other milestone is having two incredible kids that are, you know, in the family that are chasing it. My son's trying to take my helmet and I'm trying to keep it.
Do you fear, like when Mark's talking about you going 200 kilometres, do you have a place where you put that fear inside you, or do you just not have a fear when you're driving? Are you that good that it's just a skill that you have?
No, I love that. I think, you know, even like I was just saying with my kids, they're like, Dad, how do you have no fear? You know, from the outside, it looks like I have no fear, but I think everyone's got fear. It's just at a different level, right? And I think for me, it's not that I have no fear. I think it's the fact I have an addiction for fear, because I love that feeling, that the fear and the balance between the adrenaline and just that flow is just very addictive.
You spoke about being like a young boy growing up in East Auckland, and if a kid's got a dream and they actually dream it with all of their heart and all of their passion, it comes true. And you're a classic example of that. What are you dreaming about now, and you know, how do you keep that spark alive to sort of motivate you to move forward?
Well, so for me, like now, you know, my biggest dream is just to be the coolest dad on the planet, you know, and be able to fuel my kids' dreams. And it's been fortunate they want to race. And, you know, my son Link, he's now got a car based up in Japan. He's up there with my Japan team that we won the Japan Championship with back in 2018. So now they look after him when he goes up there. He's just won the New Zealand off-road racing short course champs. You know, he's been doing that since he was like 6 years old. My daughter's like 9. So like the dreams are there for them to succeed and be able to, you know, take it as far as they can go. But for me, I mean, our program consists of competing and drifting still, though we've won the ones that we've wanted to win. You know, 2018 was probably the biggest one for us to be able to take down a lot of my heroes and my inspiration when I first discovered drifting on a DVD, pretty much right when you hopped in that car, Mark. I was pretty fresh to the sport. But, you know, that was my inspiration. So to be able to go up there and win that with my team. But then our program's also broken up with film shoot stuff. You know, we've got, you know, it's up to us as the Red Bull athletes to create this like content. You know, it's up to us to come up with the ideas of whether you're a BMXer, a, you know, snowboarder or a drifter or whatever your discipline is. What is the next craziest thing in your sport? You know, and if we believe in it, if we dream it, we want to do it, you know, that's where the Red Bull gives you wings. They'll fly those ideas. So the film shoot stuff and then demonstration where I get to really showcase drifting, the pinnacle of drifting that we've been able to take it to, you know, and we've been very honored to be able to be the first to drift on many tracks from, you know, even the grassroots days for me here doing the NZV8s, which was like, you know, kind of the pinnacle of racing here in New Zealand, then V8 supercars, you know, going over to Australia, doing some demos there, and then that's elevated into doing Formula One. We've done Abu Dhabi, Yas Marina, Melbourne. Just 2 weeks ago, we're in Austria doing Red Bull Ring. You know, so for me, that's great for myself and our brand partners, you know, obviously the exposure, but I think more so for our sport and giving it the credibility it deserves, you know, because it only takes one news presenter to say, you know, boy racer drifting around a roundabout kills a pedestrian. It's like, that's not drifting. You know, they clocked us over 260 kilometers an hour at this last event in Austria. I was faster than the GT3 Porsches, and I'm sideways waving to the kids on the fence.
Just explain to our audience what is drifting and how do they judge it, you know? So what's the sport of drifting?
So, I mean, drifting is, I just say it's the freestyle motocross on four wheels. You know, it's a judged sport where it's line, speed, angle, and style is the main criteria. You got three judges, you got a judges panel, and the politics that run with it, you know, whether it's boxing, gymnastics, freestyle motocross, anything that's judged has always got politics. But I think for me, there's always been my perspective of looking at it was doing the transition from freestyle motocross. I never went to a rider's briefing and where they talk about what the judges actually wanted to see. I'd just ride if the fans were into it, you know, freaking sweet, and send it. And it's pretty much the same now of the drifting. You've got three judges, and different countries have different, you know, you go to USA and they talk about fluidity and smooth, and I'm like, fluidity? I don't even know what that word freaking means, but it sounds boring, you know. I'm like, I like dangerous and dynamic, and you can go to Japan and do the crazy ninja flips and be really aggressive and dynamic, and so yeah, it's really hard to kind of want to go. I mean, some drivers love it. They'll go and they're competing all around the world, and they'll change their driving style for different judging criteria for different countries. Where for me, I kind of like, yeah, there's the three judges, but then there's, you know, 30, or well, we just did Poland last year. It's over 50,000 people sold out grandstand in Warsaw. And I'm there for the fans, man, give them their $20 worth. And, you know, some people are out there trophy hunting. And for us, yeah, like I say, we have won some of the big championships, but entertainment, that's what got me into it.
Eva?
Yes.
You like a big drifting fan?
Yeah, I love drifting, and I was going to ask you, what's your favorite race you've ever taken part in?
My favorite, project is, but a favorite race, like actual competition, was Formula Drift Japan, winning that. But probably the craziest activation we've done was in South Africa. We just Google searched world's most dangerous roads. Actually, we did the Crown Range here in New Zealand from Queenstown. You know, for us in 2013, that was the first Red Bull clip to get 1 million views overnight, which was freaking incredible milestone for us to be able to do that. But we took the same, our production crew here from New Zealand. We found this other road in the Franschhoek Pass, which went out of Cape Town. And it was pretty much the same, but it was a little bit faster. So we're doing 248 kilometers an hour with no armcos to the cliffs, you know. So Crown Range is as crazy as it was. It wasn't, you've got a lot of armco, which would stop you. Well, I don't know. There's a lot of speed. It's the sort of stuff you don't want to think about. But I think for me mentally, doing the South Africa when we had baboons jumping out in front of us because of the noise of the cars, and like it's just you know, you never know where the helicopter pilot's coming from, because you know the helicopter pilot, they got all the Cineflex cameras mounted to it, and you know we just get called action, and it's up to me just to lay it down as hard as I can and as fast as I can. If I'm scaring myself, I know it's going to be a pretty entertaining clip.
Have you ever had an opportunity to do anything with film work? Like, have you ever been asked to do stunt work in movies or anything like that? Is that a natural progression?
Yeah, we've done commercial-based stuff. You know, a lot of commercials are actually filmed here in New Zealand because our rules are pretty flexible, you know. It's like, yeah, she'll be right, mate, we'll send it, sweet as, bro. You know? But the Hollywood stuff is very hard to get into. It's kind of like three guys that have got, you know, that's their umbrella, and it's very hard to get into. And they've got it pretty tight knit because it's a good income to literally do some pretty basic stuff, you know. And I think you look at like Tokyo Drift when that first came out, and there was some incredible driving like on that, but it was at the same time, it was at very early stages of CGI, so all the computer graphics that they lay over the top of the film and made a lot of that incredible driving look fake, or just, you know, just kind of diluted from what it actually was.
I reckon if you drove with me on the Crown Ranges, you would be shitting yourself.
Oh, he'll be terrified if he comes with me.
We would pay you to teach Rick how to drive. Do you think someone who, even after 60 years, doesn't know how to drive can be taught? Like,
I can drive.
No. Tricks?
No.
You'd be on your radar?
Mecca, do you reckon I'd scare him if I drove with him?
Yeah, you most certainly would. But, you know, I think you can answer that question by saying you can't teach somebody who can't catch to catch a ball. You know, it's very difficult. You can't drive.
I believe that because I can't catch and I can't kick a ball. I was the opposite to you, Mark, and Rick. At school, I was the worst at playing freaking rugby. I was tiny at college, and I would just go and show off on my skateboard. I'd get beaten up at school for showing off, you know, doing tricks. But I was like, man, I'm just here entertaining, you know. And
well, mate, I don't want to blow too much hot air, but, you know, if you're a kid at home and you're wanting to know the answer in today's society where you've got everything at your fingertips, and if you've got a creative idea and you can dream it, I mean, what you've managed to create, you're one of New Zealand's greatest sort of pioneering sports people, because you've dreamed something, you've actually got on board with like-minded people like Red Bull, and you've lifted them and they've lifted you. And now we look at Red Bull and we go, man, they're the people who are in charge of that most dynamic sports around the world, and that's why I love Red Bull. Their branding, their marketing, superb. You've been a massive part of that, and that's come from inside there. So for any kid watching, for any person watching who wants the answer, dream it and lay it down and have a crack. And you've done that, and, mate, I reckon you're one of our finest. So brilliant to have you on.
I really appreciate the support, Mark. Like, yeah, looking back up to – even the 90s, you and bloody old Reggie, were the bloody always were a big inspiration. And, you know, we had All Blacks come to our school and they would say, like, if you want to be a successful sportsman and be paid to do a job doing sports, you got to be an All Black. And I was like, fuck, there's no way I was ever going to be an All Black because I never had a ball. You know, I had an old clapped out BMX bike that I was trying to fix myself and put my chain back on. And then I got a dirt bike, and Mum was just into horses, so it was fortunate. We were never home. Like I say, we had a one-bedroom unit till I was about 14. I slept on the bunk bed up the top. And for me, it's you know, money will never buy passion, right? And it's something that if you've got the vision, well, then you've just got to go out there and work for it, you know. And it's I think from New Zealand, it's tough for what we do, because like obviously now I'm kind of like sometimes like, oh man, I wish I was just a like Red Bull skateboarder. I could just hop on a plane with my skateboard. But when we're all these events every weekend, you know, you got a race car, you got all the spares, you know, there's all the tools. Like it's crazy. We have a 40-foot container. We're loading up planes. You know, we just built that McLaren last year, and you know, being self-taught, I think, has really fueled and being able to help me get to where I am.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'll echo Macca's thoughts, and thank you so much for joining us on the TAB Sports Cafe. It's a real privilege to have you here on the last show. So thanks and all the best for all the craziness you've got ahead.
Awesome. Sweet as, guys. Appreciate it.
Yep, yeah, you're mate. Inspiring.
Thank you.
Can't wait to watch the next generation.
Awesome. Thank you so much, mate. Really appreciate thank you. It. It was an awesome man. He's just such an incredible story, eh?
Yeah, it's amazing, eh? It's. I mean, you could do a whole show on him.
Yep, very but, interesting.
You know, I mean, he's obviously got a really passionate mind, a very creative mind, and has some skills to go with it.
It'd be great having an Uber company, wouldn't it, that you ring, like Uber X, Uber Drift, you know, you ring them and they show up and you jump in and it's like, you know.
Yeah, mad Uber.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea.
Pay extra cash, you know.
Was it genuinely scary, Macca?
Oh, mate, it was absolutely the most terrifying thing I've ever done. Like, he's going 200 kilometres an hour down the track, sideways, you know, drifting like that, backward and forward, and the wheels are that close to ground. I'm just going... And I'm no genius, but physics would dictate if a tyre gets on grass, the car spins, and there's you're going to hit something at 200 kilometres an hour, you may not make it out. So I just said, mate, that was awesome. I just got to grab something. And, mate, I was out like a rat out of a drain pipe, gone after one lap. It was meant to be five laps. No way in the world.
Now, obviously, this is a special show. This is the TAB Sports Cafe final show, and I thought it'd be really cool to have some amazing guests. And so Lydia Coe's going to join us.
Oh, she is amazing.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, all looking forward to talking to Lydia Coe.
Where's she now?
Well, I recorded it this morning.
Oh.
So you all get to listen to like another edition of the Salizzo Files. Lydia Coe joining us. And Lydia, first of all, now that the show's coming to an end, I'm going to work on my golf game. So what's your tips for me around my short game? Like... And my short game is when I hit the ball off the tee, that's my short game. So how would I get more length?
Great question. I think it's the magic question because a lot of people want to hit it further but still straight. I'm still trying to figure that out myself, in all honesty. But I think... You know, obviously physique is a very important part and, you know, some people just naturally have it. But the important thing is just efficiency. You know, I know girls that, you know, I'm 5'5", so like 166 centimeters. And there's girls that are shorter than me that hit it further than me. But I think it's just how to utilize, you know, your muscles and the technique as well as possible. But at the same time, I think there's a reason why a lot more athletes and golfers are spending more time in the gym too. So it's not just the golf swing and, you know, golf practice that makes it work. So maybe you need to hit the gym. I don't know.
I mean, I'm only, at the moment, I'm about 235 kilograms. So I've trimmed down a lot. So I've still got a lot of power. But your short game has been incredible in this season. You know, what's the secret to your short game?
The secret is that I think there was a span in my career where my ball striking was really terrible. And, you know, as difficult that time was, I think when you are pushed to your limits where, you know, the only thing you can really bank on is your short game, that those kind of those bits excel. And I think the times where my ball striking was really not great, I did need to lean on my short game to try and make up and down or, you know, salvage a par at very difficult positions. So I think that was probably where I had the most growth. It's weird because recently I've been feeling like my ball striking has been better, but the short game has not been as good. So it's just like it's hard to get all the puzzle pieces together. But for me, definitely when my ball striking was questionable, it was the time where I was able to get creative and kind of learn different short game shots.
I mean, you've been one of the best players in the world since you're like 17 years old. I mean, which is incredible. What keeps you motivated?
You know, golf is a sport where there is no perfect score. Like in, you know, in bowling, I think 300 is as good as it gets. But you know, I think there's been players that shoot 59 and think, oh, I could have shot 58. And, you know, or people who have their best round ever, which might be just to have broken, you know, 90. And then you think, oh, if that one putt didn't lip out, I might have shot 88. So it's just like, I think that it's a constant cycle of knowing that you can be better. And, you know, which drives me nuts at times because I'm like, okay, where is that final stop? But, you know, I've still got goals, and, you know, while I'm still playing, I want to play the best golf I can. And, you know, this game drives me crazy, but I think it's a good thing because it always, you know, keeps me motivated.
Yeah. Just a question from Mark Ellis. Do you know who Mark Ellis is?
It's okay. Former All Black.
And you're only saying that because I told you before we did this interview. But
yes, exactly. I was just about to say that.
He's very motivated by financial, by money. And so when they report on golf, they always report on your season in terms of how much money you've earned. Is that how you measure success?
No. But maybe I need to have a chat with Mark and see what he thinks and why he thinks that way. But I mean, like, let's be honest, you know, as a golfer, you know, this day and age, I think we have a lot of great opportunities. You know, our purses are getting bigger and bigger. You know, we're getting to play these, you know, these very championship golf courses. And, you know, the tournament itself is just getting elevated. I still feel like there is a lot of room for improvement, especially if we compare to, you know, how the men's kind of have it. But it's you know, money is a big thing. And, you know, for people who have, you know, family, obviously that's is really huge. And, you know, it's really life changing. You know, Gino Titico, I think she won $3 million or something at the, you know, at the Tour Championship last year. And 1 week of golf, you win $3 million. It's pretty crazy. But, you know, I think that's why the opportunities have changed. And I think as players, it's our goal and duty in a way to just keep growing the game and, you know, give more opportunities to the future generations too.
How do you find balance? Like you're traveling so much, you're playing golf so much, but how do you find a balance around golf, family life, everything else, the things that you enjoy?
Yeah, you know, it's, I think I'm at that point in my career where I can kind of pick and choose what events I play. Whereas when I was a rookie, it was more, you know, trying to play as many tournaments as I can, so I just get more experience under my belt. But I'm young, but I in golf or golf age, I feel like I'm a little older now. So when I play a couple weeks in a row, by the third week, I'm a lot more tired than when I was playing 10 years ago. So I think just kind of understanding my body and myself the best is the best way forward. And, you know, that way when I do have the couple weeks off, you know, try and think of, you know, ways to kind of, you know, step away from golf and recharge and be ready for the next one. But my husband and my dog, who's literally sleeping next to my foot right now, I think they keep it, bring more balance in my life. Whereas I think before then it was, golf was obviously a very dominant, you know, factor in my time and, you know, and everything.
So what does Lydia Ko do for fun? Like when you're not playing golf, what's a fun day for you?
I work out. I try and work out almost every day. So working out, and I'm just like that normal 20-something-year-old, maybe not 20-something-year-old. I don't know what normal 20-something-year-olds like are meant, normally what they're meant to do, but I do like watching Netflix and watching baking shows and just chilling. And, you know, I stay in the kitchen a lot. And my husband always says, like, you don't have to cook, but I just like cooking. It's therapeutic. And I haven't fed many people outside of my family, so I don't really know how good it is. But, you know, cooking has been kind of my way to resort and be away and, you know, have a little bit of a, you know, different life outside of golf.
I mean, and you travel for work constantly. Do you ever travel for fun? Do you ever go places and go, I'm just going to this beach or this place in Europe for fun?
Not often. Obviously it's hard because, you know, I'm trying to time it with the people that I go with and, you know, my husband, doesn't have the leisure of saying, oh, okay, I'll take this week off and then just go somewhere with me. So, yeah, you know, we've done a couple of trips. I think last year we took a trip to Cabo, which was really nice. And it was the first time I've actually gone on a trip without my golf clubs. And I realized how much of a hassle golf clubs are. You know, it was so much easier traveling without them. So, yeah, it's we don't have one plan yet. But, you know, it's I live in the U.S. And I think the great thing about the U.S. is that, like, you go a little bit, like, you know, you go to a different state and it almost feels like a different country. But
she's so sweet.
So nice. Mm.
You never really hear her do an interview. So that was cool. Nice to sort of get an insight.
Yeah, and it was really nice for me to be able to sort of talk to someone without you guys interrupting, to be fair.
Yeah, is it just me, though? But there is something creepy about the Salizzo Files as a whole. As a whole concept. Yeah. There's something unnerving about it. I don't know what it is.
It's just called an interview.
I think it was so lovely. Yeah. That was very, it was quite strange.
You thought it was strange, too. Eva, I asked you to come in to give me some support.
But it was so lovely, and because usually we are not lovely, and that's why it was strange, don't you think?
So you're saying I'm lovely?
Yes, lovely.
Yeah. See? So this is our last. Just to explain to Eva, we get DoorDash every week. DoorDash give us food every week. And so we've got this week from Ben & Jerry's, we've got ice cream and brownies. Thanks to DoorDash.
That's good.
Put it in there. So you're not allowed to eat any of it, though?
No, I'm not, yeah.
Because?
Are you still on the cigarette and smint diet, Eva?
I dropped the cigarettes, actually.
Just the smints now?
Still on the smints, though.
Just on the smints, yeah.
No cigarettes anymore.
Yeah.
That was it. It was cigarettes and smints. I remember it distinctly.
Just a reminder, actually, of when Eva worked on TAB Sports Cafe. This is some of her work.
Thank you. И в новините този час, както виждате, косата ми е пораснала много, благодарение на много различни неща. Дел Блакс. Отборите, които победиха, тези, които не победиха отново. И всички, които ги наричат войниците, са в първите 8. Но се надяваме, че ще успея да бъда в първите три, които ще се състезават накрая.
Can I just ask you, Eva?
Yep.
Are you really from Bulgaria?
I am, yeah.
So what were you saying? Because that sounded like nonsense.
Some of it was actually very important. It was about my hair to start with.
Yeah.
And that is growing quite a lot. And then I said that the teams that won.
Yeah.
And the teams that didn't win, which makes a lot of sense. When you think about it.
Can I ask, how did you end up in New Zealand?
Because my father was here.
There you go.
My father was here, so he invited me. Yeah, yeah.
Do you like it?
I love it.
Now, happily married with two children, you know.
Yeah.
New Zealand, your home.
Yeah, I love New Zealand. I do.
So are you a Bulgarian or a New Zealander?
I am a Bulgarian New Zealander.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So your kids will be New Zealanders, eh?
Yeah, they are New Zealanders.
Do they speak Bulgarian?
They understand, but, I mean, they don't really speak it because we actually speak English at home, weirdly. It's very strange.
Because your husband's Bulgarian as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
And we speak English.
It's weird because we speak Bulgarian. It's weird.
Yeah.
You know? When we can.
Yeah. How is your Bulgarian?
Oh, it's It's good, yeah.
Mark's Bulgarian is amazing.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, he did a whole apology in Bulgarian. That was so good.
Oh, yeah, with the yacht racing.
And I'm not going to translate it, don't worry.
No, please don't.
I won't.
That was an apology for the human cannibal, and that was when Ralph actually ended up in the America's Cup sales with those spikes all over him because he was dressed as the Gimp, and he was undoubtedly perforating sales in there. I haven't conceded that for a long amount of time, but the America True team, their sales would have had holes in them. So if they didn't go quite as fast, there'd be a reason for it.
Because of Ralph the Gimp.
Yep.
Yeah, because the Gimp was rolling around in there with his black spikes on, and he was, you know, he wasn't a light man.
I just like the idea of the security guard hearing the alarm rushing down to an America's Cup boat going, what the hell's happened? And he sees an ex-All Black, a human cannonball, and a gimp rolling around on his boat.
Sounds like the start of a joke, doesn't it?
It does. It's a good joke.
Talking of that, Paul's here from the TAB.
Hey, cheers, Rick.
Uncle Paulie.
I just thought we'd get the insults on early.
Yeah, very good. It's all uphill from here then, I guess.
Mate, how about that ending of the Warriors game? You would have been just fizzing at the bung.
Oh, I can tell you, the bookies, they had their feet up on the desk. They were smoking cigars. They were happy with how things were going until Lekha Halasima burst through and scored that try with time up on the clock. It was a great result for the bookies if Newcastle had won. It was a great result if Lekha Halasima hadn't scored a try. He was about he was over $3 prior to the match starting. And if you were betting live, he got out to $15 to score a try during that match. So, and there were quite a few that jumped on. So they're very, very happy with the way Lekha's going. Last minute Lekha, he does it for the punters.
Actually, I was watching I was at the test match in Hamilton on the weekend, and the guy next to me was live betting, and he bet on Anton Leonard Brown to score a try. And every time the All Blacks had the ball, he's, give it to Anton, give it to Anton. And then just before half time, sure enough, mate, the guy was so happy until we found out that he put $1 on it. He might have like $6 or something like that.
Nah, good on him.
It's the reward for your foresight, Ricky. He's probably just feeling good about himself and that he knew what was going to happen.
Oh, yeah, it was brilliant. You could see how much excitement it had given him. So thanks, Uncle Paulie.
Well, I hope he gets a few more because I can tell you there were plenty that did back Anton Leonard-Brown and, of course, Will Jordan, who was just scoring tries for fun these days.
What's around the corner for this weekend?
I guess the Lions, the second test, that's the big, big thing on the horizon. Of course, the Warriors return home to Mount Smart to take on the Titans. But in terms of the Lions, they were very, very popular with punters in that first test. And, boy, they looked very, very good as well. They were a whole heap more physical than the Wallabies. And the punters were rewarded. They forced the bookies' hand there. The bookies thought that they had the line short enough, but no, they didn't. And the market made them move, and there was plenty of money going into the pockets of the Lions supporters and punters.
What was the score on that game?
Oh, they won by the Aussies scored late, but they're pretty comfortable. I can't see the Aussies beating the Lions in the series. I think it's 3-0.
Do the Lions, where do they go next? Do they come here or do they go to South Africa?
No, it's all in Australia. So second test in Melbourne on the weekend and then the third test in Sydney the weekend after. Australia have got some players to come back in, Rob Valentini and Will Skelton, which will make a difference. But really, the Lions look so good. Finn Russell's like, I don't know, he must be one of the best players in the world. He's incredible. And it's just, you know, when you've got two teams, one team's better than the other, it's hard for the team that's not quite as good to win, you know. It's a pretty simple game. Where else, Paul, where else is the money going?
Yeah, well, they reckon there's going to be around 100,000 at the MCG for the second test. So I hope there's no kiss cam.
Well, remember when Bob Hawke was there and he was at one of the Boxing Day tests?
He
and the cameras zoomed in on Bob, and he just, and the whole place, he just put his hand up and he must have been 78, and he chugged a pint, just woof, and the whole place erupted. I mean, it's something about Australia, the simplicity of that MCG, and, you know, if your PM's whacking a pint like that, woof, at 78. Apparently he used to be the university champion for a yard glass.
Yeah, thanks. Were you ranked, Macca, when you were at university?
No, I was the goater on the sideline. I'd provoke people like the Wolf, and Anton Oliver was pretty good. Barney could do a sub-3.
Right.
Jugs. You know, could put his cock in a cold jug and it would touch the bottom.
What was that pain?
Can I just have a vote to see whether this...
Yeah,
it's pretty easy. Can I have a vote to see if that makes it into the final edit?
Mate, I can't get
through the froth. Hold on. Lana, does that make it into the final edit?
It should make it in. It'd be a very proud moment.
You think it will make it into the edit?
I think it will, yeah.
Yeah, Lana,
I can then be a bit more graphic. It was sort of like this, you know. There's the bottom and it just sat me like that.
Thank you.
It's like an awful thing. Awful thing.
Is that a proper jug? Like a big jug?
Like a 1 litre, yeah. Filled to the brim.
Well, gee.
Don't get drawn in, Paul. Don't get drawn into the conversation.
Yeah, you've told me about this before, Rick.
Yeah.
I knew I'd get Uncle Paulie with this one.
All right, mate. Well, this is our last show. So thank you for everything you've done. You've done the TAB proud on your appearances. You've given us an education about bees and stuff. Yeah. You've shown us your new haircut and you've given us an insight into how the Warriors fans abuse you at the game. All the best and thanks for everything you've done.
Yeah, no worries. And next time, if there is a next time, I'll wear the beekeeper's suit that all my mates bought me. So, yeah.
good show. Nice. Yeah.
Well, hey, we're just about to go live to Shane Van Gisbergen. Do you want to be part of that interview, Paul?
Oh, hang on.
Yeah, well, you can't be because I'm actually recording it after the show's finished.
Oh, yeah. So,
and it's another episode of the Salito Files with Shane Van Gisbergen.
Yeah, the creepy Salito Files.
Can you tell him he costs us a whole heap of money when he wins?
Yeah, I will. I will.
Yeah.
Thanks, cheers, mate.
Okay, thank you. See you guys.
Cheers. Okay, well, special welcome to Shane Van Gisbergen to the Salito Files, obviously everyone's favourite show. So, Shane, where are you at the moment?
So I'm in a place called Mooresville, which is in about half hour north of Charlotte, North Carolina. That's where I'm based now.
So tell me about North Carolina, Charlotte.
It's right. It's fairly different to home in Auckland, but it's pretty good. We have to be based here. Like, all the teams are pretty much based around Charlotte and it's like NASCAR hub, I guess. And then there's a lot of local tracks around here, but then the airport's here as well, and everyone flies in and out of here. So it's a pretty cool base. It's one of the better parts of America that I've sort of been to. So lucky enough that we get to live here, I guess.
How are you acclimatizing to living in the US?
It's good in some ways, but I really miss home. So I kind of lived in Australia the last 15 or 16 years, but I would head back to New Zealand at least once a month. But yeah, obviously can't do that now. We race here every single weekend, so pretty homesick a lot of the time. But yeah, it's not a bad place here.
Mate, you're having a great season. I mean, particularly in those street races. Tell me about your season so far.
Yeah, so I've joined the NASCAR Cup Series, it's called, the top level here. I did the Xfinity Series, which is the second level, last year to kind of learn. And it's difficult, like the ovals especially are very difficult, but we feel like we're progressing a little bit, but yeah, then we'll do the road courses, which I, you know, that's like my background. We've really done well there and won three races now, which is epic, but the ovals are the main type of racing, and we need to progress, you know. It sounds easy only turning left, but it's really difficult.
What makes it so hard?
Just like where to start, you know, the speed that you do, the banking of the corners, and then the way the tracks evolve is so difficult. And then you get no practice. We only get 15 minutes of practice or 20 minutes of practice each weekend, and they're all places I haven't been to, and then you go and qualify and race. So I'm a bit behind. By the time the end of the race, I'm okay, but it's difficult, man. It's really, really tough. But second half of the season, we start going to tracks I've already been to, so hopefully show some improvement.
And NASCAR's got its own particular culture, isn't it? The fans are unique and massive, massive crowds. How are you enjoying that?
Yeah, it's pretty full on, like the pre-race stuff and, you know, where they get us all lined up, they do the invocation and anthem and stuff like that. And, man, they're really passionate people and really patriotic too, which is actually awesome. Like all the sports events at home, you kind of miss that a little bit. It's pretty, you know, how much they respect their country and stand up for it. It's really, really cool. So, yeah, I enjoy it. And then going racing, it's pretty fun every weekend too.
And you're off to do a Legends race shortly. What the hell's that?
So I started, it's called Summer Shootout. It's like they have it in Australia. It's called an Aussie racing car, like a real little sort of miniature race car. They have it here, it's called a Legends car, and we do that. I've started racing with Scotty McLaughlin, another Kiwi driver, and we do that every Tuesday. It's a series that goes for 10 weeks. There's 2 weeks to go, and yeah, it's just a fun thing on Tuesday nights, and we normally end up crashing into each other, but it's pretty fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a special type of driver that drives in his spare time.
Well, I love it. You know, I always wanted to be a race car driver, so getting to do it for fun is pretty cool as well.
Is it scary on the ovals? Like, do you have time to worry about things, to have fear?
Oh, yeah. Like, when you have a crash, especially at, like, Daytona or something, when you got 40 other idiots surrounding you and you're doing 320K, it's crazy. Like, you realize how fast you're going when the car starts going the wrong way. So that's probably the hardest bit. You know, we only have one corner in Australia and New Zealand that's at 300K plus at Conrad Straight at Bathurst, the end of that. But here, almost every corner you're entering at that speed, it's mind-blowing that a car can go into a corner that fast and stick. It's pretty crazy.
What is your mental approach? How do you approach, say, when you're going into an oval?
I just do as much like study as I can and try and prep as good as I can, and then I try and match my teammates. My teammates are very good, and you know, some weeks our car's might not be that good, and we'll be, you know, like the best car in our team will be 20th. I'll try and match him. You know, when our cars aren't good, there's no point trying to do something the cars can't do. So I'm trying to just match my teammates. You know, they're very experienced on the ovals, and just trying to get closer and closer to them. But it's difficult. I'm pretty conservative type of person, I guess. I can't just go out there and go crazy. It takes me a little bit to build up and feel comfortable. So that's a weakness I'm really trying to work on.
It seems funny that you have to sort of get familiar with an oval, because basically it's an oval. Are they all the same, or are they different? What's different about them?
No, they're all different. Like I wasn't naive coming over that it's just two left-handers and you're just driving in a circle, but it was so surprising how difficult it is. And you know, like the cars drive sideways down the straight to put like the right rear in the air to get more downforce. And like you're driving down a straight crooked thinking your bum's telling you that you're sliding, but you're not. Like, it's everything I've ever learned in racing is I've had to relearn on the ovals. It's crazy the like how they've developed here and how they get around so quick. It's just it's like, yeah, like going from rugby to softball or something. Like, it's two completely different sports, even though you're still playing with a ball or race car. It's not the same thing.
And what's the next few weeks hold for you?
So we got Indianapolis this week. We race on the big oval, and then we go to a place called Iowa, which is small, and then we go to Watkins Glen, which is a cool race circuit in sort of the northeast of the states. And then pretty much then it's playoffs, where they have like a knockout championship, which we locked into the playoffs with our wins, and then they'll start with 16 drivers and work downwards every couple of weeks.
Mate, you're doing us proud over there, and are you having fun?
I love it, yeah. It's really cool. You know, as I said, I am homesick. I wish we could be a bit closer to home, but I really enjoy it. Like every Thursday or Friday, we're packed up off to the racetrack for the weekend, and then you spend the week here at home preparing, and it's really, really cool racing every week.
And obviously your highlight this week is being a guest on the Salizzo Files. Right, so that was the interview with Shane. Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. Fantastic.
You're a big fan of the Salizzo Files,
aren't you? It's got a real momentum to it, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we could just knock this show on the head and open or have the Salizzo Files replace it.
Well, when I said this is the last TAB Sports Cafe, I mean it's the last TAB Sports Cafe, but the Salizzo Files start next week.
And that's the TAB Salizzo Files.
TAB Salizzo Files.
Yeah.
Everyone's looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Mums can't wait.
So you've stolen the sponsor
from
the show and transferred it.
Yeah.
Get your invoice in this week.
Just cost cutting. Yeah. Now, before we do go, there is a chance to look back at that insight that you give me each week from the messages you send me on Instagram. We'll start with you, Lana. This is what you sent me that you found amusing. Fish. So it's a whole lot of fish, sort of, and the guy sort of comes at you. You think they're sharks, but they're not sharks. They're just big fish.
Yeah, that was cool. Oh, that's your arm. Holy shit.
That's funny.
Oh, don't you love it?
Yeah.
I thought we had that last week on the show. Yeah.
We talked about it last week.
They were big fish. And it's like, yeah, it was very good. That wasn't a setup.
No. Well,
everything's so set up.
It's like a kingy, was it?
I don't know what
it was.
Have
you seen those guys who tickle catfish? They sort of go into the mud and they go into the water and they
put
their little fingers. And then they pull them out and like the catfish has got their arm right up to the armpit.
It might have been a catfish.
No, that's sort of fatter, bigger.
Catfish are sweet water, aren't they?
I don't know.
I can't tell.
Well, then why would you talk? Why would you interrupt when you don't know? Catfish are sweet water and kingfish are salt water.
Yeah, catfish are definitely water. River fish.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So that wasn't the river.
It's hard to know, isn't it?
All right. Well, this is now of all the things that Mark has sent me, this is probably what sums up the things his two greatest loves in life: dwarves and Shetland ponies.
I sent the Shetland ponies are sent on their way as Olvis Cross Cascadia in the blue silks, one of the first to show under Tallulah Roberts. Far side is Orkney's Candy Drum and Guinevere Smith. More near side, here comes Happy Hansel Thorfinn at High Cost Bee's Knees.
Oh, they're very cute.
And the walk towards the near side as well as Anwood Meteor is coming home very strongly under Bella Grant. It's Anwood Meteor and Bella Grant who just edge it now from High Cost Bee's Knees, and Maddie Taylor in second on the run towards the line. It's Anwood Meteor. Anwood Meteor and Bella Grant have won it from High Cost Bee's.
You can't tell me that if you had that at a race meet, it wouldn't be an absolute highlight.
Yeah, why don't they do it?
Well, just like that's like a waste of a full size track.
They do. Well, maybe it's not a full size track. Maybe they just do like a 100 meter sprint.
Yeah, they bolt them down the straight.
But wouldn't you, like, isn't the whole attraction of dwarves on Shetland ponies that you can put them in smaller venues?
Yeah, but I reckon you could put like maybe a monkey on a dog's back as well and chuck that in the mix.
So we'll just get a smaller version of Paul on the TAB to come on and talk about that. I mean.
So we'll do the regular TAB stuff, and then we'll do the dwarf feeding.
A childlike person like me and one like you, get a mini version.
Or putting a monkey on a greyhound's back, that would be quite interesting. Like greyhound racing with monkeys on their backs.
No. What about this one? This is my one. This is golf. You know, like you've obviously learnt with the Lydia Ko, Salita Files, how much I know about golf. This is sort of golf I enjoy. This is what happens when you hit too early and you get the people up in front of you. You might hit them with a golf ball. There's nothing funnier than middle-aged men fighting. Shaping up.
Jesus.
It's actually quite. It's terrible. This is terrible. Oh.
You can step in, Justin.
This is golf.
You can.
That's him. Beating nose.
He's still going for more.
This is crazy, hon.
You're fucking crazy.
Oh, now the other guy comes in. There's always got to be a friend coming in.
Guys.
He's quite a big unit too, the guy in blue, isn't he?
I don't think we should condone such senseless violence, Rick.
No, I'm saying that's how terrible is that. That's like shocking. I'm putting that as an example of how not to behave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I send something in? No.
You sent like dogs diving off diving boards. Like all you send me is AI animals coming off diving boards. That's it.
I did it once and then you kept sending.
Yeah. And I kept pretending it was you. All right, so what are you up to, Lana? Let's wrap it up.
Well, that's about it for me. Nice to see you, Eva.
Nice to see you.
It's been
too.
Lovely. What a catch up.
Will you be watching the Salizzo Files?
Yes, I can't wait. What day of the week it is?
It's on every night, is it?
Yeah, every night. The TAB Salizzo Files with DoorDash and Steinlager. Yeah.
Nightly update.
You looking forward to the Macca?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's checked out. He checked out.
I reckon that is the perfect ending to this show.
End.
Yeah. So the good news is, like, this is the final episode of the TAB Sports Cafe, but we are working on some stuff. We will certainly be around in some form. It won't be the Salizzo Files, unfortunately. It should be, but it won't be. There is some stuff coming up, so stay tuned. I don't know what it is yet, but we'll work it out soon. And just want to say thank you very much to all the people that watched us and supported us and click like and subscribe. And thank you so much. And thank you to Eva.
Thank you.
Thank you, Eva.
Thank you for having me. And
cheers, Eva.
Yeah, the rest of you can fuck off. Good night.
Great.